This is Ozarks at Large for Tuesday, June 14th. Happy Flag Day. I'm Kyle Kellums.
And I'm Antoinette Grajeda. Later on the program, celebrating Black Music Month in Rogers, the Fayetteville Farmers Market honors kids and their dads this week, and old-time music in West Plains, Missouri.
And in just a moment, Roby Brock of TalkBusiness.net talks to Jason Tolbert about political news of the week. It has been an unusually interesting political past few days in Arkansas for a non-election year. Friday, Alice Stewart resigned from her job in the Arkansas Secretary of State's office to join Michelle Bachmann's presidential campaign staff. There has also been news that the chair of the National Republican Party is coming to the state, and a new report from the Chronicle of Higher Education says Arkansas has the least educated legislature in the country.
The report says one-fourth of Arkansas's legislators have no college experience, and 40% of the state's legislators do not have a college degree. Scott Smallwood with the Chronicle of Higher Education says such numbers are not necessarily bad news.
There are certainly people who say, you know what, in a country where only a third, less than a third of adults have gone to college, having some people in the state house who have a range of experiences may be just what the government needs.
Nationally, 75% of state's legislators have college degrees. Scott Smallwood says the report found no correlation between legislators' personal education and their support of higher education.
I heard from a lot of people who made the argument that, you know what, state legislatures are at their best kind of a citizen legislature, and they should be close to the people. And we don't necessarily need a legislature that is full of a super educated elite.
While 60% of legislators with degrees is among the lowest rates in the nation, it is still much higher than Arkansas's population. Only 13% of the state's adults possess college degrees.
The chair of the National Republican Party is coming to the state next month. State GOP Chair Doyle Webb says the appearance will be part of a statewide gathering of Republican leaders.
On July 22nd and 23rd, the state Republican Party will be enjoying what we are calling cruising into the majority. And that weekend will kick off with a riverboat cruise on the Arkansas Queen up the Arkansas River. Our national chairman, Reince Priebus, will be joining us, and tickets are $150 for the reception, dinner, and cruise.
The GOP cruise is also scheduled to include most of the top Republican elected officials in Arkansas, including Senator John Bozeman and 3rd District Congressman Steve Womack. One Republican no longer working inside the state's borders is Alice Stewart. She announced she was leaving Secretary of State Mark Martin's office to become Michelle Bachmann's National Press Secretary. Alice Stewart held the same position for former Arkansas Governor Mike Huckabee when he ran for the White House in 2008. Bachmann, a member of the U.S. House from Minnesota, has filed papers that says she intends to run for president in 2012. She participated last night in a GOP debate of White House hopefuls that was held in New Hampshire. Kevin Diaz, who covers politics, and Michelle Bachmann for the Minneapolis Star Tribune, says the fact that Alice Stewart and other former Huckabee presidential staff members like Ed Rollins have joined Michelle Bachmann's team shouldn't be a surprise.
There was a lot of speculation in the early going that if Huckabee actually jumped into the race, that it could be a problem for Bachmann because they would be vying for the same social conservative voters. So the fact that Huckabee is not in doesn't surprise me now that some of his people would want to be helping her out.
Kevin Diaz says both Michelle Bachmann and Mike Huckabee appeal to a similar voter.
She got her start in politics as an anti-abortion activist. She got her law degree from Oral Roberts University. She has said that she was called into politics, by Jesus.
And former Governor Mike Huckabee has stated he will not seek the GOP nomination in 2012.
The current Arkansas Lieutenant Governor Mark Dar of Springdale has sent out a Twitter message that he's being encouraged to move into the newly drawn 4th Congressional District to challenge Democrat Congressman Mike Ross. If Dar moved about 15 miles east, he'd be inside Madison County in the recently expanded territory of the 4th District. It grew geographically following the redistricting process. Roby Brock from our content partner TalkBusiness.net recently talked with political observer Jason Tolbert about Mark Dar's options.
I think what you're seeing is that Dar has a lot of options available to him. He's become really one of the rising stars in the Republican Party. And when you look at the congressional race against Mike Ross, for one, other than the incumbent senators and the other congressmen, He's probably the strongest statewide Republican name at this point. And the way that district has been reshaped, he lives just a few miles over from the new part that extends up into Madison County. And I would think he would do very well in that new part of the district. And I think he would do well in South Arkansas in addition to that. So he's looking at whether he should do that or not. He's also looking at whether he may run for governor in 4 years. The thing he told me when I talked to him is he has to be prepared to be governor right now as lieutenant governor because he's next in line for that if anything should happen. So he's already in that mindset of how would I be governor if I had to step into that role. And so once you start thinking about that, it kind of becomes rational that you would look at the possibility of running for governor in the future.
Lieutenant Governor Darr presides over the Arkansas State Senate, which, if nothing seismic happens, will be led by State Senator Larry Teague, a Democrat from Nashville, Arkansas, who's up for re-election next year. Teague is hosting a fundraiser in the near future, and last week he sent an invitation that included every Democratic state senator and 15 Republican ones, too. And that stirred a little partisan controversy.
Sure. We have Senator Larry Teague. He's the pro tem designate for this next session. And he faces a re-election in a district that's leaning more and more conservative. So he has a fundraiser coming up trying to shore up support for his re-election campaign. And he had all 35 senators listed on his invitation, which of course included 15 Republican senators. And there was some discussion as to how appropriate it was for Republicans to be supporting a Democrat who is going to be running probably a pretty competitive race this next year. And during that discussion, it came out one of the senators, Jason Rapert, Republican from Bigelow, said he never gave his permission for his name to be on the invitation. Obviously, we know some of the state senators from Bigelow can be very independent-minded, and we saw that here again when Rapert said he was the only one of the 35 that said, I didn't give permission for that, and Senator Teague had to kind of back down and apologize for having his name on there, apparently an error.
Finally, on the national scene, we continue to monitor the ever-shifting Republican presidential field as a number of candidates and would-be candidates line up to take on incumbent Democratic President Barack Obama. Without a consensus candidate, the GOP primary looks like a mess right now. Or does it?
Well, I think you have what happens many times when the party who's not in the White House is trying to field a candidate. There's not really one established person that everybody gets behind this early in the race. If you had to pick an establishment person, you'd probably go with Mitt Romney. But there's a lot of people that have some problems with Romney, particularly his support of RomneyCare there in Massachusetts. And so there's kind of a scramble for who's going to be the other guy, the guy that's going to oppose Mitt Romney in those primary states. You've got Tim Pawlenty, who's been there for a while. A lot of people thought Mitch Daniels was going to get in the race. He has backed out. He's not going to get in the race now. Mike Huckabee's backed out. And now you hear some talk about Governor Perry down in Texas getting in the race. It looks like that's very likely to happen, particularly after Newt Gingrich had a disastrous week. He had almost his whole senior staff resign over how he was running the campaign and some internal disagreements there. So that's going to open a door for Governor Perry. I think you may actually see some of Newt's staff go over and work for Governor Perry's campaign if he gets in. So it's just very muddy right now. It's not really sure who the nominee is going to be. It's going to be very interesting to watch over the next year with the Iowa straw poll just right around the corner and a debate actually taking place on Monday night in New Hampshire. As is usual, when an incumbent is in the White House, it becomes a up and down vote on them. And so this will be a referendum on President Obama. I think it will all come down to what the economy does over the next year and year and a half. If the economy stays bad or even gets worse, it'll be difficult for him to win re-election. But if the normal cycle causes the economy to bounce back, which we all hope it does, but if the economy bounces back and recovers, it may be a smooth sailing re-election for him. So that's really outside of the control over who the Republican nominee is. I think the economy is probably the biggest player in the game as to who's going to be the next president.
Roby Brock talked with Jason Tolbert of the Tolbert Report this week. Roby is the editor and publisher of the website TalkBusiness.net. Support for content from TalkBusiness.net on Ozarks at Large is provided by Mitchell Williams Law, providing strategic counsel on a variety of sophisticated legal matters since 1954. Mitchell Williams Law Firm combines decades of diverse professional experience to clients across the U.S. Today, the firm employs nearly 80 attorneys from offices in Arkansas, Texas, and New York. Online at MitchellWilliamsLaw.com. And Bank of the Ozarks offering the tools and services to make Arkansas businesses work. More information is available at BankOzarks.com. And Verizon offering small business solutions, including high-speed mobile broadband, wireless email, global services, and push-to-talk. More information at a Verizon communication store or online at VZW.com/small business.
Earth, sky.
China is developing wind power, but it's taking longer than expected. That's according to energy policy expert Hai-Bing Ma of the World Watch Institute.
Ma told Earth Sky that right now, China relies mostly on coal to generate its power. As a result, it's the world's largest emitter of carbon dioxide, a greenhouse gas produced by coal burning that's known to contribute to global warming.
Ma said China is trying to increase its use of alternative sources of energy. To that end, the country has installed billions of dollars worth of wind turbines. In fact, Ma said, in 2010, China surpassed the United States as the country with the most wind turbines installed.
But despite China's recent upsurge in wind farms, Ma said, there's an infrastructure problem that hasn't been widely reported. He said many of China's wind turbines can't connect yet to the country's electric grid. There aren't enough cables, wires, and related technology to bring wind-generated electricity from rural Mongolia, according to Ma. That's where most of China's wind turbines are located.
And that's why, Ma said, over the next few years, China will still have to rely on increased energy efficiency in industry and further development of hydro and nuclear power. More at our website. Earth Sky is a clear voice for science.
We're at earthsky.org.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums, and with me in the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio is Teresa Maurer, our slow food correspondent. Welcome back, Teresa.
Glad to be back.
And also in the studio, Peggy Maringer, and you are the market manager for the Fayetteville Farmers Market.
Yes, great to be here, Kyle.
Now, today is Tuesday when we're talking, and today is a market day, but we've got three more this week, and each one has its own sort of special event. And Peggy, that begins Thursday with Kids Day?
Yes, Kids Day is going to be on the downtown square, and we have farm animals that are coming to visit. There'll be a fire engine from the Fayetteville Fire Department, puppet shows, and visitors from the Audubon Society and the Montessori School will have special children's activities.
This is just, I mean, school, for most children, school's only been out now a couple of days, no more than a week because of all those snow days.
Yeah, that's right. And I think one of the things the market's trying to do is have some activities at the market that bring the young people down to have a good time, to kind of connect that local food with some fun. So I think this is just going to be a delightful day and a way to learn, too.
So, and of course, there's no fee for coming up. You just bring your children and...
Oh, yeah, and the blueberries are in. Kids are going to have a great time.
I was going to ask, you both keep track of what's here, and if you engage in social media at all, Saturday morning, Facebook and Twitter both were just exploding with everyone bragging about the blueberries.
Yes, it's the time, and get them while they're here, because I think most of the vendors that I've talked to have a limited supply, so we want you to buy soon, buy now, buy a lot. And they are great things for kids, you know. I mean, you can even just throw a few blueberries in the freezer and pour a little bit of cream over those and stir it up in a bowl, and you've got a nice sort of quick ice cream. So.
It's a relatively small growing window for blueberries, is that right?
Yes. It kind of depends on the weather, and the weather has hit people this year, both the flooding side and the drought side that we're in now. But really just a few weeks, and you know, but they're, when they're on, they are on.
Do either of you have recipes with blueberries? Because I have to tell you, in my house, they never get past
the fresh stage.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. You put them on the counter and they're gone in a day.
Oh, yeah. You know, I've seen wonderful recipes where, blueberry muffins, blueberry pie. But I bought a whole gallon, and no, I just ate them all.
I think that's how most stories end, with blueberries.
Yeah, and I've got a favorite cobbler recipe that's very easy, again, but it involves cooking, and some people don't want to do that this time of year. The other thing is, if you buy a lot now, they freeze with no effort at all. You essentially can either pop them in a Ziploc bag, or you can spread them on a cookie sheet if you just want to get a few out at a time. That kind of separates them. So they're really a nice, friendly fruit for freezing, eating fresh, or cooking into something really wonderful.
Okay, so Kids Day, Thursday, all those events, then a big two-day weekend.
Yes, since fathers often don't get acknowledged as much as they should, we decided to have the biggest festival we could for fathers. And we're stretching it over 2 days because we couldn't fit all the fun into one day. And sometimes our Saturday market gets a little bit crowded, and this is such a big event, we decided to just take it to the streets. We've asked permission, and we're closing all four streets around the square to make more room for people so we can have lots of people come for these fun things we're going to do. Now, Saturday, the contests will start at 10 a.m.
Contests?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
What kind of contests are you going to have?
Special contests for men.
Okay.
But women are also included, too. Lewis and Clark and Mustache Goods and Wares and Arkansas Helicopter Rides have graciously donated prizes for the ugliest bicycle, the longest fingers, the hairiest hands.
All right.
And then we'll have four categories of mustache contests. We'll have the longest mustache.
So you've got, it's too late to really start planning that one.
Well, but we've got a contest for you, Kyle, because there's a contest.
Yes.
Right? There's a contest for best mustache made out of
fresh produce.
So you could get real creative with that.
So, wait, what now? So, like, on your face?
Yes. So, you could create a mustache and get it to stick on your face made of fresh produce of any kind.
So green beans come to mind or something?
Yes.
Okay.
So
you could get real creative with this. And very colorful, too. Okay.
So you're encouraging people to play with their food.
Yes.
Okay, very good.
We'll have a table at the manager's stand also with some other materials to help you adhere your mustache. And we have another category for best applied mustache. It doesn't have to be of fresh produce. We have some wonderful stick-on foam. You could create your own Groucho Marx mustache.
So this is an equal opportunity contest.
I got
children,
you.
Pets, anybody can put on a mustache this day. And for the best overall real mustache, we're offering a free helicopter ride. We'll have an opportunity for dads to take photos with or without the family, and we'll put those on Facebook. And on Sunday, we're continuing this festival at our Botanical Garden Farmers Market, which runs from 9 in the morning till 2 in the afternoon. Lewis and Clark is going to set up a bicycle obstacle course on site, and we will have a scavenger hunt between the Botanical Garden Market and Lewis and Clark. We're going to be grilling vegetables. We'll have photo opportunities for dads to dress up as El Terrifico, and we'll take his picture
and put it
on Facebook.
Left up to you what El Terrifico looks like.
It involves sombreros and sashes.
Oh, okay.
Let's say that.
All right.
Arkansas Helicopter Rides will be offering a special $25 package for dad to take a helicopter ride on Saturday and Sunday.
Yeah, and that Sunday market is pretty special. It is. It's more laid back. It is more spacious. It is as wonderful as the Saturday market, but a little different atmosphere there. A wonderful variety like the Saturday market, and I think especially with Father's Day, that'll be, you know, the vendors will be, you know, bringing some extra special stuff. So you've really got your choice, the busyness of the square or the botanical garden, kind of more spacious, and you can kind of get a visit into the garden too if you want to. But they're both going to be great. And we're really actually trying to promote that Sunday garden, because some people say, you know, I got too much to do on Saturday, and I'd really like a chance to buy produce, but, you know, when else can I do it? So that Sunday market at the Botanical Garden with some special stuff for Father's Day is a real chance to check it out.
And, of course, now you can use, and has been the case for a while, food stamps, and senior vouchers, things like that, right?
That's right. The senior vouchers are $50 worth of fresh produce over the season that you can get. If you would like to sign up for that, you can go to the Office of Human Concern, and their number is 636-7301, and they can get you an application form. You need to be over 60. And we also are taking food stamps.
WIC vouchers, right?
Yes, mm-hmm. And the SNAP EBT food stamps. And during the month of July, we have had donations from Ozark Natural Foods, Ozark Electric, and the Bank of Fayetteville so that we can match the first $10 that you spend every Tuesday and Thursday with your SNAP benefits.
And that's in the month right now?
In the month of July.
In the month of July coming up. Gotcha.
Yes.
Okay. All right. So Thursday, Kids Day. Saturday and Sunday, the two-day Father's Day extravaganza. And remembering Sunday is at the Botanical Gardens.
Yes.
And if people want to know anything else about the market, can they go online?
They can visit our website at FayettevilleFarmersMarket.org.
All right. Thank you both.
Thank you. Kyle.
Peggy Merringer is the market manager of the Fayetteville Farmers Market, and Teresa Maurer is a regular visitor to Ozarks at Large and helps keep us track of slow food events in the region. For a link about more information for signing up for senior vouchers good at many local farmers markets, you can go to our website, ozarksatlarge.com. This is Ozarks at Large.
Local support for Ozarks at Large comes from the Fayetteville Animal Shelter and Services, supported by the City of Fayetteville and dedicated to the welfare of animals and the people who associate with them. 444-3456 or Fayetteville Animal Services on Facebook for photos and information. The 13th season of the KUAF Summer Jazz Concert Series kicks off at the Walton Arts Center on July 16th. The series, with additional performances August 6th and 26th, is presented by the North Arkansas Jazz Society, Walton Arts Center, and KUAF 91.3 FM. Tickets go on sale June 22nd and are available at waltonartcenter.org or 479-443-5600. For more information on the KUAF Summer Jazz Concert Series, digjazz.com or 479-225-2306. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Antoinette Grajeda. The 17th annual Old Time Ozark Heritage Festival will be celebrated this Friday and Saturday in West Plains, Missouri. The festival highlights old time music, dance, and arts and crafts of the Ozark Highlands. Ozarks at Large's Ithiagni Hodri Madolker spoke with Matt Meacham, who helped organize the event, for more details.
This Friday and Saturday, a drive of a little over 3 hours will get Northwest Arkansans to the 17th Annual Old Time Music Ozark Heritage Festival in West Plains, Missouri. The festival is a celebration of old time music and the cultural heritage of the Ozark Highlands. Matt Meacham, a folklorist with the West Plains Council on the Arts, says the festival will focus on traditional music along with a variety of events.
On Friday, June the 17th, we'll have several performances of traditional music representing this region on the main stage. Starting at 11 a.m., Emily Dowden Estes and the Southern Missouri String Band, and then Hybrid Sound, and then the Mammoth Springs String Band, and then Julie Hennigan, and then Judy Dominey Bowen. And then a performance by some friends of a musician named Karen Kraft, who just recently passed away. She was a longtime participant in our festival, and they'll be performing a tribute to her. That's at 5 p.m. And then Don Beadle and Joanne Long at 6 p.m. And then at 8 p.m., we'll have a performance by one of our featured musical guests for this year, who is Junior Brown. very well-known country guitarist based in Austin.
Several musical workshops will also be conducted simultaneously in the West Plains Civic Center, including a clawhammer banjo workshop, a songwriting workshop, and another one for young musicians. According to Matt, several demonstrations of traditional cooking will also take place throughout the day.
The What's Cooking stage is coordinated by Judy Hart, who has been involved in our festival for many years and was recently featured on an episode of No Reservations with Anthony Bourdain on the Travel Channel. And so she's really become a kind of a spokesperson for the foodways of this region. She and various friends of hers will be making many different traditional dishes, everything from beans and cornbread to squirrel pot pie to chocolate mayonnaise cake to goat cheese. And there'll be those demonstrations will be happening all day, and folks will have a chance to interact with those cooks and ask questions of them and so on.
Besides the musical performances, the festival will feature an exhibit on the history of logging in the area, quilt shows, demonstrations by regional spinners and weavers, and an evening square dance on Friday. And the list of activities does not end here.
Throughout the day on Saturday, we'll have again traditional music on the main stage by various local and regional performers all the way up through early evening. And then I should also mention that our featured musical guests on Saturday evening, starting at 6 o'clock, will be Blackberry Winter, which is a group of regional musicians who were featured either in the movie Winter's Bone or on the soundtrack to the movie Winter's Bone. And then at 8 p.m., Leona and Ron Williams, who are very well-known and accomplished country musicians, will be the featured musical guests at 8 o'clock on Saturday.
The festival was started 17 years ago by the West Plains Council on the Arts to showcase some of the unique selling points of the region. Matt says some activities featured in this year's Old-Time Music Ozark Heritage Festival aren't commonly found on other festival schedules.
One thing that I think is very distinctive about this festival is the What's Cooking stage. It gives people a chance to interact with Judy and her fellow cooks and to ask a lot of questions and exchange ideas and so on. One other thing I might mention that is actually totally unique to our festival: annual Bob Holt Memorial National Jig Dance Competition. And that takes place at 2:30 p.m. on Saturday, the 18th. Jig dancing, per se, is very much a part of folk culture of the Ozarks. It's the only competition that we know of that is devoted to jig dancing specifically, and that is open to people from really all over the country.
Other activities to look forward to in this festival are the mule jump competition and the goat cart race.
Well, the goat cart race will be the first one that we will have had, and that takes place on the Civic Center grounds. And so presumably the first goat to complete the course will win that race. The mule jumping is a form of competition that, as far as we know, originated in the American Southeast when raccoon hunters started training their mules to jump over fences so that they wouldn't have to interrupt the hunt in order to find a gate whenever they needed to cross over into another property. Well, the competition is based on the height that the mules jump. They jump from a standstill. We have a barrier that has a bar across the top, and we just keep raising that bar until each mule is, you know, is unable to clear it, and the mule that jumps the highest is the winner.
The Old Time Music Ozark Heritage Festival will take place Friday and Saturday, 10 a.m. through 10 p.m. on the grounds of the West Plains Civic Center, extending up to East Main Street in West Plains, Missouri. For more information, call 417-256-8835 or log on to oldtimemusic.org. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Iti Agnihotri Mudholkar.
It is Tuesday, June 14th, 2011. I'm Kyle Kellums.
And I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
With us in the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio is Becca Bacon-Martin. She's the editor of What's Up, found in Northwest Arkansas newspapers.
And today, it's a happy Becca because Kevin Kinder will be back tomorrow.
Woo-hoo.
So then I'll only have to be three people.
And Kevin Kinder, I can't wait to talk to him because he went to Bonnaroo.
He did, and I bet he's having a great time.
If you're unfamiliar with Bonnaroo, it's like Wakarusa, but even bigger.
Oh, it's band people that you would never think you'd get to see. I mean, legendary people. Yeah. I cautioned him strongly about sunscreen and a hat, so we'll see how that turned
out.
He's
a veteran of these things. He's a veteran of these
things. That doesn't mean he remembers yet. Okay, going on today, there's a great new series of summer programming for adults at the Boone County Library in Harrison, and there's a program at 5:30 today on restoring antique furniture. This is one of those things, I wish I lived there, I'd be there.
I was going to say, are you going?
No, but I'd love to. You can find out more at 870-741-5913. And a heads up for tomorrow, a program at the Shiloh Museum in Springdale called Tall Grass Prairies features Ozark, Ecological Restorations founder Joe Woolbright and our favorite birder, Joe Neal. It happens at noon, and it's free.
You are all about restorations today.
Yeah. I want to restore my sanity.
I like the theme. Thank you, Becca. Becca Bacon-Martin is the editor of What's Up, found in Northwest Arkansas newspapers.
150 years ago, government officials in Richmond, Virginia, sent Brigadier General William Joseph Hardee to Arkansas to recruit and train soldiers for service in the Confederate Army. Hardee, a West Point graduate and Mexican War veteran, was best known as the author of Rifle and Light Infantry Tactics, the standard textbook on tactics used by both sides during the Civil War. The Georgia native was a skilled drill master and formed his raw troops into fine soldiers. He would lead most of these men east of the Mississippi River, where they would fight and die in combat in Tennessee, Kentucky, Georgia, and North Carolina under the distinct Hardee pattern flag, a blue field with a silver moon in the center. To learn more about Arkansas history and the 150th anniversary of the American Civil War, visit ArkansasCivilWar150.com. The Arkansas Civil War Sesquicentennial Commission is an agency of the Department of Arkansas Heritage. I'm Mark Christ.
Former President Jimmy Carter first proclaimed June Black Music Month in 1979. 32 years later, the tradition continues. On May 31st, President Barack Obama proclaimed via an official release that June shall be recognized as African American Music Appreciation Month, during which we can, quote, honor the rich musical traditions of African American musicians and their gifts to our country and our world. Rogers Little Theater is celebrating the occasion by partnering with NWA Events Unlimited to present Black Music Month Celebration 2011. Richard Dean Prudenti, RLT president, is pleased with the collaboration.
This is a perfect partnership because what Rogers Little Theater wants to accomplish in the community fits with the vision that Gwen Kelly and Northwest Arkansas Events Unlimited has. We want to develop our community, and we have been wanting an opportunity to have a program that fits what we call community development and programming. This was by coincidence, coinciding with one of our committees that is focused on bridging between the stage and what's outside the theater and making a connection to new audiences. So what we do is more than just entertainment. It is building understanding, community, and fostering relationships.
Gwen Kelly from NWA Events Unlimited explains that she has been helping organize events to celebrate Black Music Month during the last few years. She says they have received some favorable feedback and says when she approached Rogers Little Theater about working on this year's commemoration, they graciously embraced the idea. The celebration will feature three events, beginning with a concert on June 23rd.
In partnership with First United Methodist Church of Rogers, there's going to be a gospel jazz concert. Here's a focus that we've had NWA Events Unlimited this year, kind of having a focus on where the collision or mashup, if you will, of gospel and jazz occurs. And we know that a lot of prominent artists who are in the secular world today, you know, they kind of got their start singing gospel in their home churches, etc. So it's going to be a delightful evening of listening to how jazz and gospel comes together. And there'll be some great songs. One of the groups that will be performing will be a local Fayetteville group called Black Pearl and Friends, and they have a very strong following here in Northwest Arkansas. And then our very own Arkansas Gospel Mass Choir will also be performing as well, too. They are a choir that was founded about 6 years ago here in Northwest Arkansas. They released their first CD about 2 years ago. They charted on Billboard, on the gospel charts, making it up to number 5 with their first CD. And just recently, this spring, released their second CD, and that's doing very well on the charts as well.
Movie Musical Night will be June 24th and will feature a screening of the film The Wiz at Victory Theater. Chicago-based film critic Reggie Ponder will be on hand to deliver a lecture prior to the screening. The celebration will wrap up on June 25th with Driving Miss Daisy, the musical event, which will feature performances by Felicia Hamilton and Justin Stewart, a local actor who portrayed the character Hoke during RLT's recent production of Driving Miss Daisy.
Understanding the time period that Driving Miss Daisy takes place, which is roughly about 1948 through 1973, when you think about the musical library, if you will, or the richness of the American songbook from that time period, and then what was happening in our country during that time, and to showcase that against the music and particularly of music that was performed by African-American artists of the day, which was really, even though they were African-American, it really is everyone's music. And we know that you go from the historical time period of, you know, the civil rights era and some of the music of that time period up through, you know, the early rock and roll period up through the 1970s where we're on the cusp of disco, if you will. I don't know if we'll see any disco in Driving Miss Daisy at all, but some of the music from that time period really matches various scenes of the show, and I'm excited what the team here at Rogers Little Theater, how they're going to showcase that music. So I'm very grateful for them just picking up on that little germ of an idea that we brought to them.
An all events pass is available for $25. Tickets to each individual event are available as well, and a portion of proceeds will benefit the theater.
Net proceeds from this partnership will go back to Rogers Little Theater, our new youth enrichment series. And that includes summer camps, intercession camps, classes, and a full-fledged children's musical, Oliver, in May 2012. We, as part of our community development and programming initiative, we are focusing on youth, and so that our programming goes beyond production, but also is very educational. And so Gwen Kelly is very supportive of this initiative and has earmarked a lot of
net
proceeds
to benefit, you know, this is the wonderful work of Rogers Little Theater and for the community. And we know that the investment in the youth of our community is so very important. And the teaching of culture and the sharing of culture is very important. So we're very pleased to be to contribute just a small part to encourage the work of Rogers Little Theater.
More information can be found at rogerslittletheater.org or 631-8988. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums. With me in the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio is Wayne Bell. He writes the column Culture Club at FayettevilleFlyer.com. Wayne, welcome back.
Thanks for having me.
You have your fantastic Fayetteville Flyer t-shirt on today.
Yes, thank you, Fayetteville Flyer, for sending me this lovely t-shirt, available at FayettevilleFlyer.com.
Someday we'll do a story about product placement. That's not what we're doing today.
I get nothing from that.
The conversation today, we are in the middle of summer blockbuster movie season. This past weekend, Super 8 opened up. We've had superhero movies. We've had
pirate movies.
Big-time comedies. Hangover 2 sequels.
Mm-hmm.
All of these movies that have taken the top spot have been sort of conceptual and not necessarily, if at all, star-driven, right?
Well, yeah. I was thinking about that last week when I was trying to think about what we could discuss this week, and I saw in The New Yorker they ran an article that I had been thinking about this summer a lot, which was when I was growing up, back in the 80s and 90s, it was really exciting to go to movies every summer, and they were star-driven, whether it was
Harrison Ford,
or Arnold Schwarzenegger, or Julia Roberts, or Tom Cruise.
Sylvester Stallone,
or Bruce Willis, or even Steven Spielberg as a director. But that kind of genre, or that kind of power that's placed behind a celebrity, is kind of dead now. There's very few stars that can open a movie successfully.
Just based on the fact that they are in it.
Right. And then you look at what's caused it. And I think a lot of it has to do with, well, one thing I found very interesting that The New Yorker had said was, you know, in the 80s and 90s, it was all about stars. And then it became all about special effects. And now it's all about the brand. So you have Pirates of the Caribbean, which is the only kind of star-driven movie, but it's certainly a brand, too, now with four movies that came out this summer. But you have these either sequels like The Hangover, or you have, you know, reboots like X-Men. So you have all these other things, but none of them have a star, a bona fide celebrity at their center. And maybe that's because celebrities are too expensive, or they realize that they can't turn profit on it. They could spend their entire budget on a movie. And, you know, one of the great things is the new X-Men that just came out doesn't have any of the celebrities that were in the first movies,
no.
The Halle Berrys or the Hugh Jackmans. And that's probably because they can make the movie for what they would have ended up paying the bulk of it to his salary.
Now, other than maybe Meryl Streep or perhaps Tom Hanks or Julia Roberts, there just don't seem to be people that have a pull like that on many moviegoers.
No. And, you know, Meryl Streep, typically the people who would go to see a Meryl Streep movie would also go because of the content of the Meryl Streep movie, with the exception of a few, you know, kind of farces that she's done. And Julia Roberts and Tom Hanks are not the presence that they once were. Tom Hanks, you know, is more selective, and Julia Roberts has had kids. She doesn't work as much. So it's kind of an interesting place right now. I mean, think back 10, 15 years, and we were excited every summer for a movie, mm-hmm. whether it was Jurassic Park or whether it was, I'm trying to think of some of the other huge ones that came, E.T. and stuff like that. And now, you know, there's a new movie, a new blockbuster every weekend. So there's no time for it to get on a roll and live the whole summer. And so why would you invest all this money in a celebrity? And then, you know, the flip side to that is our celebrities now are big, you know, the movie star's dead. The celebrity is very popular.
And there is a difference.
Right. So you've got these celebrities, which could be reality stars. It could be somebody who's a celebrity based on their personal life. Look at Angelina Jolie. I mean, she's never, with the exception of Laura Croft, she's never been able to open a movie very big. But I would say she's probably the biggest celebrity female. And she doesn't have a great track record with film as far as drawing in the money. But she's a celebrity. I wouldn't call her a movie star, though.
Do you think that is better for movies, worse for movies, or just different?
Well, I would say that, you know, it's better for movies to I would say it would be better for movies if smaller movies that have stories were getting produced that couldn't afford the celebrity or the movie star. And that would be great. Unfortunately, I don't think that that's happening, because what you're getting is the same kind of mindless drivel. Nobody's going to say that Men in Black or those summer movies were, you know, great literary merits. But, you know, you're still getting those movies. You're just getting no star involved in them. And so, you know, at the end of the day, you get these kind of forgetful summers. And the things that do stand out, from the big budget standpoint, are normally the known franchises, whether it be Pirates or the one that I still get excited about and I'm looking forward to is, you know, the Batman series. But there's normally not a huge star involved in them. Heath Ledger and Christian Bale became big stars because of Batman. But I still wouldn't say that they're, you know, movie star caliber, those people that you, you know, imagine when you think Hollywood.
Wayne Bell writes the column Culture Club for FayettevilleFlyer.com. He's a regular visitor to Ozarks at Large. Thanks a lot.
Thanks a lot.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
I'm Kyle Kellums. Antoinette, how about it? Time for a question.
Excellent.
We'll give away a couple of movie passes to any Malco movie theater in the area and a couple of vouchers that you can turn in for tickets to any home Northwest Arkansas Naturals game.
That's always a good time.
You went to the Nats last night.
I did go last night. Unfortunately, we did not win. But it was still a good time.
There you go. The Naturals play again tonight against the Tulsa Drillers. It's Flag Day.
It is Flag Day.
So I thought I'd ask a question about, kind of about the flag.
Good plan.
There are 13 stripes under the United States flag.
Mm-hmm.
And those stripes
represent the 13 colonies, unless my social studies teacher lied to me.
I don't think he or she did. And it's not a multiple choice question today.
Okay.
We're just going to say, okay, those 13 original colonies?
Yes.
If you listed them alphabetically,
okay,
which of the 13 colonies comes last?
Oh.
So, there you go.
All right.
If you know the answer, call 800-522-5823. That's 800-522-KUAF. And all correct answers will go in the ceramic cow, and we'll pick a winner for the movie passes and the baseball tickets.
Good luck.
And here is the writer's almanac for Tuesday. It's the 14th of June, 2011. It's Flag Day, 1777. On this day, the Second Continental Congress approved the Stars and Stripes as the flag of the United States. It's the 200th birthday of Harriet Beecher Stowe, born Litchfield, Connecticut, 1811, daughter of a prominent minister, Lyman Beecher, a great abolitionist. She married, moved to Cincinnati, which was just across the Ohio River from a slave-holding state, Kentucky. And Harriet Beecher Stowe encountered fugitive slaves, and from her experience, she wrote Uncle Tom's Cabin, 1852. A national sensation. The novelist Jane Smiley wrote an essay in 1996 in Harper's in which she said that Uncle Tom's Cabin was a better book than Huckleberry Finn. She said, "Huck Finn fails even where it succeeds by allowing white people to feel good about getting over their racism without ever actually doing anything about it. Personal relationships," she wrote, "do not mitigate the evils of slavery." In Huck Finn, she wrote, "All you have to do to be a hero is acknowledge that your poor sidekick is human. You don't actually have to act in the interests of his humanity." It was on this day, 1942, 13-year-old Anne Frank began to keep her diary, in which she wrote, "The best remedy for those who are afraid, lonely, or unhappy is to go outside somewhere where they can be quite alone with the heavens, nature, and God, because only then does one feel that all is as it should be and that God wishes to see people happy." And today is the birthday of the screenwriter Diablo Cody, born Brooke Busey in Lamont, Illinois, 1978. She moved to Minneapolis to join her boyfriend, whom she met on the internet. She took a job as a stripper in the Skyway Lounge, wrote a memoir about it, Candy Girl, set out to write a screenplay based on her memoir and instead wrote the screenplay Juno, which won an Oscar when it came out in 2007. Here's a poem for Flag Day, a poem that Francis Scott Key wrote in 1814, watching the flag wave. You all know the first stanza, so I'll start with the second. On the shore, dimly seen through the mists of the deep, where the foe's haughty host in dread silence reposes, what is that which the breeze, or the towering steep, as it fitfully blows, half conceals, half discloses? Now it catches the gleam of the morning's first beam, in full glory reflected now shines in the stream. 'Tis the star-spangled banner, O long may it wave o'er the land of the free and the home of the brave. And where is that band who so vauntingly swore that the havoc of war and the battle's confusion, a home and a country, should leave us no more? Their blood has washed out their foul footsteps' pollution. No refuge could save the hireling and slave from the terror of flight or the gloom of the grave, and the star-spangled banner in triumph doth wave o'er the land of the free and the home of the brave. O, thus be it ever, when free men shall stand between their loved home and the war's desolation. Blessed with victory and peace, may the heaven-rescued land praise the power that hath made and preserved us a nation. Then conquer we must, when our cause it is just. And this be our motto, in God is our trust. And the star-spangled banner in triumph shall wave o'er the land of the free and the home of the brave. That's the Writer's Almanac, supported by Novo Nordisk, since 1923, committed to diabetes care and areas of unmet medical needs. Learn more at novonordisk-us.com. Produced by our technical director, Thomas Scheutzker. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Time to answer our question today, which dealt with the 13 stripes, kind of the, not really, the 13.
Yes, no, maybe.
Kind of. The fact that the 13 stripes on the U.S. flag, it is Flag Day, represent the 13
colonies. Mm-hmm.
And the question I asked was, which of the original 13 colonies is last?
When you put them in order alphabetically.
And the answer is?
Virginia.
Virginia. Do you know which one is next to last? That would have even been a better, harder question, maybe.
South Carolina.
Very good.
Woohoo.
So we will pick a winning name out of the ceramic cow in just a moment and give that person a call.
Local support for Ozarks at Large comes from Community Clinic, serving as a medical home by opening access to medical care in Northwest Arkansas for over 10 years, helping neighbors lead healthier lives in Springdale, Rogers, Siloam Springs, and on the web at communityclinicnwa.org.
And Bordino's Restaurant and Wine Bar on Dixon in Fayetteville, offering lunch and dinner menus using seasonal, locally grown produce. The first seating menu is available on Monday evenings and from 5 to 6:30 Tuesday through Saturday. Reservations, drink menus, and more available at Bordinos.com.
A listener-supported service of the Department of Journalism and Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences at the University of Arkansas. This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Rogers, Fort Smith, Red Star.
Red Star is in Madison County.
Yes, it is. It's right by the border of Newton County.
And a special salute to Star City and Flag, Arkansas.
Yes.
Have a great Tuesday.